Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorse and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great. So today's episode is entitled The Comeback Kid, and I was actually going to save this title at least for the episode right after the election when Biden defeats traitor Trump in November, but I figure that after that great State of the Union speech, it was worth busting it out now. And also, you know, why save it? We need to build some more momentum to have that crushing victory in November. So to start here, you know, whining and complaining is one of America's favorite pastimes, as we're largely an entitled, unserious, and ungrateful nation. There are many things I love about America, but many that I do not. And again, this notion that we kind of like whining and complaining is really true, and it's been especially true these last few years. In addition, punching liberals may be America's number one pastime. There's never an opportunity passed up anywhere in pop culture to punch liberals, because that's, again, America's favorite pastime. However, the comeback kid is our ultimate favorite archetype, and it always triumphs. The comeback kid is the core of most American popular movies, comic books, mythical narratives, etc. It's in our DNA. And now that we're entering the general election and people realize it's Biden versus traitor Trump, the comeback kid narrative is likely going to take hold, and this will be to Biden's benefit. So I want to kind of build on that. The fact that Biden has a stutter, has suffered huge personal tragedies throughout his life, inherited the pandemic and the inflation that came with it, makes his comeback story perfect for, you know, being one of the biggest ever. The media, which remember, isn't there to inform but to entertain, will also pick up the comeback kid narrative after years of running stories about how everything sucks and Biden is unpopular. Can't you see the stories now? Despite low approval, Biden comes back. Despite the rough and tumble, Biden comes back. Despite being down in the polls, dot, dot, dot. You get the narrative here. So let's talk a little bit about this State of the Union, which really I think is going to be the inflection point where we see this comeback kid narrative coming and taking hold. And then I'm going to talk a little bit more about putting Biden in kind of context in the next segment. So I'm going to just admit here, I was very nervous about the State of the Union, and I didn't watch it live. Not because I don't have faith in Biden, because I'm risk averse these days. I'm just so nervous that one stumble or fall or weak moment that the media would have pounced on would have just gotten me so depressed that I had to wait until the reviews were in to watch any of it. And I'm not proud of that. I just want to be honest, I'm not proud of that, but that's just the world we're in, and I was nervous, and I was not alone. A lot of Democrats who were paying attention a lot were nervous, and it was just great to see him come out so strong. So I recommend that you all watch it if you haven't, because it was outstanding. And once again, Biden defied the critics and delivered not only a very strong performance, but completely dominated the GOP circus caucus. I mean, he really owned them in the best possible way, not in a like a just, you know, a machismo, oh, he owned them, you know, he destroyed them. Not that, but like in substantive ways that were good for the narrative of what we need to do as a country and to defeat traitor Trump. He's going to have one more major speech at the convention that will be watched by, you know, millions of people, tens of millions of people over the summer, and I'm sure he's going to crush that too. I want to just make a little note that both Uncle Clarence and Sam Alito weren't at the speech, which is perfect because they're the most corrupt justices on the court, and so not even showing up for the State of the Union was kind of perfect. It's really stunning how corrupt the court has become, and I'm quite cynical about the judiciary, but they're just so thoroughly corrupt that to be the two most corrupt people of the corrupt lot is a true achievement. The fact that Thomas still sits on the court after taking millions in undisclosed gifts from right-wing billionaires and having a wife who took part in the coup shows that the American rule of law is barely hanging by a thread, which again shows that this election, this is it. If this election goes dark, that rule of law, that little thread is gone. Gone, 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 and ain't coming back. The only upside of all this corruption at the court is that people are starting to wake up to it. And one of Biden's most memorable lines from the State of the Union address was basically repeating Alito's words. I'm paraphrasing here, but Alito basically said, you know, that after they took away the Roe versus Wade decision, that women would still be able to express themselves at the ballot box over their reproductive rights. And Biden emphasized that they sure are going to do that this November and send a clear message that they aren't happy with having their rights taken away. And I just love that. And I loved how he just put it in their face. Like, you guys took it away. You unleashed this, you know, this movement of, you know, strong women who want their rights back. And you know what? Again, it sucks that their rights were taken away in the first place, but at least they have recourse. And I love how Biden leaned into this. It's also worth noting that the GOP, you know, rebuttal by Senator Katie Britz of Alabama just was so insane that it just emphasizes how deep we are in the zombie apocalypse. I keep coming back to how, you know, my title for this podcast, which I started, you know, as soon as Trump, you know, was inaugurated in 2017, is a perfect title because we're just so deep in the zombie apocalypse. The speech was a combination of Stepford Wives meets Axe Murderer, and it was so cringy that it's like impossible to watch all the way through. I watched clips, and like I could not watch the whole thing. It's just so freaking insane. How Republicans get a single vote in any election is almost beyond my comprehension. I mean, they're so truly awful in every fucking conceivable way, and yet here we are. Right? We're facing an election at the national level that is competitive, and that just shows how sick and diseased much of the American electorate is. You know, it sucks, but that's just reality. But fortunately, we, the sane people, still outnumber the zombies, even if not by the margins we'd like. If you haven't seen the SNL Saturday Night Live cold opener with Scarlett Johansson playing Katie Britz, it's a must. I'll put it and the State of the Union address in the show notes. And after the break, I'm going to come back with some more thoughts on Biden's comeback kid narrative and why we all need to stop apologizing for him as if he's some, you know, hand-me-down that no one wants. And we really need to kind of step up and acknowledge, you know, what he's done for this country and, you know, where he stands. So I'll come back with that after the break. Okay, so to start this section, I want to ask people who are complaining about Biden, which is seems to be, you know, quite a lot of people, I want to ask you a simple question. Where the fuck have you been the last 50 years, and especially the last 20? What fucking golden age of American presidents are you nostalgic for that Biden, in comparison, fares so poorly? Was it Reagan and his tax cuts for the rich and his supply side economics? Not to mention his courtship of the religious right, which began to dominate the Republican Party? Are you pining for Reagan? Or was it George Bush the First and his first Iraq war and then the recession that followed? Was that a great golden age that you're looking back on with favor? Was it the two terms of Bill Clinton and all his scandals and the Newt Gingrich revolution during that time and Don't Ask, Don't Tell and NAFTA and financial deregulation? Now, of course, Bill Clinton did do some good things, but if you look back, overall, it was pretty shitty. Wasn't great in terms of liberal progressive policy. So you can't be pining for that. Was it Bush 2, an endless war, even more outrageous tax cuts for the rich, torture, death, anti-gay marriage stuff? You can't be pining for George Bush 2, right? So what? Maybe it's the inspiration you felt for Obama. And that's great. I was inspired by Obama too. But what did we get during those 8 years? Yes, we got some improvements to healthcare and some financial regulation. We killed Bin Laden. Great stuff. All good. But we lost state houses across the country. The Democratic Party was decimated during the 8 years of Obama. We lost the Senate when we started with 60. Obama, when he came into office, had 10 seat majority in the Senate, and we lost it. So much so that when, you know, Scalia died, we didn't have the senators to confirm a Supreme Court pick and had that seat stolen. Then we had an anemic recovery because the stimulus was too small, and that paved the way for traitor Trump. So again, I love Obama, but was it really that great? Were those 8 years under Obama really that great? Think back. Okay? So look, I love Obama, but what he accomplished in 8 years doesn't even come close to what Biden accomplished in 3. Not by a mile. So look, I've already gone over Biden's impressive list of accomplishments in other episodes, so I'm not going to just do that again. But they're truly historic. So again, I ask people who are complaining about Biden, what golden age of American politics are you pining for? The reality, it's a harsh reality. The reality is that most of American politics has fucking sucked on almost every level for decades. We have done so many horrible things and endured so many horrible things. Wars, 9/11, terrorism, pandemics, torture, anti-gay stuff, huge tax giveaways to the rich, environmental rollbacks, right? And then, of course, we got traitor Trump and an insurrection. Now we're taking away women's rights. And again, I don't want to paint a completely bleak picture. There have been progress during those, you know, these last couple decades, all done by Democrats. But overall, you know, the last couple decades has been pretty fucking harsh, right? You know, I mean, again, what country do you live in where compared to the recent past, Biden isn't an excellent president? And let me remind everyone that he achieved all his accomplishments with no margin for error. None. Zero. Do you see the current GOP House majority? They have no real power, and they still can't even do the basics without throwing a hissy fit like whiny little bitches. They're a complete fucking clown car in every way. Do you remember Democratic leadership under Nancy Pelosi? That shit was locked down. She never missed a vote. Not once. Not ever. She nailed it every fucking time for over a decade. She was the most accomplished speaker in U.S. history. Period. And look what follows. Can you not see the contrast? Right? And even more than all the huge bills that Biden has passed and all the bipartisan stuff that he's done and keeping this together with all these nut jobs on the right trying to burn it down. We got a great economy after the pandemic that is the envy of the world. And it's more than that. It's even these basic things that we take for granted that are really important. He doesn't politicize the Department of Justice. He's not there telling Garland who to go after. He's letting them do their jobs as an independent agency. Right? That's the opposite of what traitor Trump did. Trying to get, you know, pardon all his friends and go after his political enemies. Biden is bending over backwards to take one for the team, to try to be bipartisan,
to, you know, reach out a hand. Many of his signature achievements are sending hundreds of billions into red states. That's right, red states, places that will never vote for him. He's actually doing right by all Americans, which is what a president is supposed to do. And even for those rightly concerned about the war in Gaza, he is taking strong executive action against the Israeli settlers. It is unprecedented. And he can have a big impact on the Netanyahu government, which again hates Biden and who wants Trump back in office more than anything. So he's dealing with an Israeli government that wants him to fail so that they can have Trump back in so that they can just wipe out the Palestinians without blinking. So look, I'm not saying don't criticize Biden. What I'm saying is acknowledge his accomplishments first. Acknowledge that he's the only one yet to beat Trump in any contest. There's only one person who's beat Trump, Biden. Acknowledge that when he came into the office, the country was in rough shape. Pandemic, the capital had just been overrun by fascists. There was huge economic uncertainty and prices and crime were both rising fast. Again, under the last year of traitor Trump. But he inherited that. And look where we are now. Record unemployment, COVID in the rearview mirror, such that almost no one even talks about it anymore. I don't even think about it, right? The murder rate is plummeting. Inflation is easing to the point that the Federal Reserve is talking about cutting interest rates three times this year. We're leading the world on climate. And again, everyone was predicting recession, 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 and no recession after bringing down record inflation and having incredible unemployment record, right? I mean, sorry, you know, an unemployment record being low, being under 4%, which is a fucking miracle. So all I ask people is acknowledge where we've come from in the past 3 years before leveling criticism. And make the criticism constructive. Something tangible that you want done that is feasible and that he has the power to control. He's not a fucking wizard and can't wave a fucking magic wand, right? So again, he can't force the Israelis to do what he wants them to do. He can't forgive all student debt because the Supreme Court said he couldn't, right? And if he doesn't do immediately what you want, be patient. Because, you know, the president has a few things on his plate, right? And even if he ultimately doesn't do what you want, maybe your specific ask wasn't a high enough priority. Or maybe the administration disagrees for a reasonable reason. Let's all have a little humility here. The guy is fighting the Russians, competing against China, trying to manage U.S. involvement in Israel-Palestine, which is the toughest foreign policy challenge in the world that has challenged every president for three generations. So just chill, take a deep breath, and be grateful for the leadership we've had the past 3 years. And then throw out another criticism if you really must. But only after acknowledging that Dark Brandit has delivered in a huge fucking way. Show him the respect that he deserves. No more apologizing for Biden. No more, oh, well, I guess I'll vote for him. Fuck that. No apologies. Stand up proud. Show him some respect that he, again, deserves. So I'll come back with the antidote after the break. Okay, so for the antidote today, as we get closer to November, people who are bad faith actors will twist themselves into pretzels to rationalize their support for traitor Trump and make excuses. A good example of this is Mark Thiessen, I think I'm pronouncing it right, in the Washington Post had an op-ed saying how badly he wants to vote for traitor Trump, but is having second thoughts because of his support for Putin. So you know what I have to say to Mark Thiessen? Fuck you and fuck you a million times over, right? You don't get to rationalize support for fascism. Not anymore, Mark. Nobody. All you fucking Republicans who are cowards and endorsing Trump and saying, yeah, I don't like the tweets. I don't like this. Fuck you. Fuck you. We're not stupid. We know you're cowards. We know you're frauds. We know you're fascists. So fuck you. So don't let these people, try to just fool you, right? Make it clear to everybody that a vote for traitor Trump is a vote for fascism. That anyone who votes for traitor Trump is an enemy of democracy and the rule of law. This election is black and white, good versus evil. Biden good, traitor Trump evil. I've been having some good conversations with Republicans who are not going to vote for traitor Trump. And they're telling their friends not to either. That's great. That's halfway there. But I keep telling them, it's only halfway. Not voting for evil isn't sufficient. You need to vote for the good. And we all need to vote for Biden and support him. That's the way we defeat fascism. Not with half-assed measures, but full commitment. That's what's required from all of us as sane, committed citizens from here until Election Day. And that's the theme I'm just going to keep emphasizing over and over again, but maybe with a little twist here and there. So with that, everybody, I hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you are, please share it with family, friends, and colleagues. Rate it. Subscribe on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And with that, everybody, have a great rest of the week. Be well. Take care.